I have, as you might expect, a lot of favorite lines in our hymnals. One of my favorites is that line in Sing Out Praises for the Journey, about the pilgrims who knew wild roads, about how we depart from the wayside hostel they left for us, and then we go forward on our journey in their spirit, but further than they had ranged so far. Pilgrims who knew wild roads, onward with the great companions, pathless we sail wild seas. This is the spirit of our faith, of our living tradition, a pilgrim church, an exploring church, and a faith that takes risks. Today's the second sermon in this month on the subject of risk, and it's the first in a two-part series on what it means for us to be a church of risk, a faith of risk. So since you are here today, you had better make plans to be here next week and catch the rest of the story. Otherwise, it'll be unfinished. Pathless, we sail wild seas. Guided by love, we risk the way things are, the status quo, the orthodox tradition which no longer serves. We're searching in the soul's deep yearnings. Our religious story is a story of people who stepped out of line, who asked the kinds of questions that Mark Bellatini asks. What words would make it plain? Why should anyone wish that its meaning was singular? Why are the questions of those who live at ease so different from those who live in constant struggle? Why would we think that any human answer is all there is to say? What opens our hearts and minds? These kinds of questions. Our religious story is a story of people who imagined something more, something different, and spoke up, wrote, built, advocated, risked, and sometimes died for asking those questions, for stepping out of line. Our religious story is a story of people who asked religious questions and who were motivated by their religious convictions to ask questions about society, about justice and sustainability and fairness. And our religious story is a story of people who asked social questions and were disturbed by society as it was and is, and who discovered in this living tradition that social questions and faith questions went hand in hand. Sometimes our story is about that brave, path-breaking individual, the visionary, Miguel Servetus, studying alone in his library, writing a book on how the Trinity had it all wrong, and standing up to John Calvin, sure that logic would win the day and convince everybody to change their mind, and not so, being persecuted, executed, for his proto-Unitarianism in the middle of the 16th century. There are other stories like this, lonely explorers making their own way, but much more common and much more successful are those networks of risk takers, what Dan McCann calls the cooperative sisters. For example, that chain of women leaders and ministers and suffragists who changed this country, a lot of them Unitarians and Universalists, who supported and mentored each other generation to generation, who gave each other courage, who were the team risk to each other, these cooperative sisters. That's the model. The early Unitarians, who preferred to simply be called liberal Christians just before and after 1800, gathered in each other's living rooms and studies to share ideas, to talk about the Bible and freedom and new scholarship, to pray together and be a comfort in times of trial. Alone, each of these men would have probably altered each of his own preaching a little bit, but mostly kept his head down in the face of the more orthodox order of the day. But together, they had the courage to say, we believe in a different form of Christianity, one that values reason and justice, one that rejects God's vengeance in favor of God's love, one that affirms the capacity of human beings to be good and decent and govern themselves. The early Universalists, rural farmers and self-educated shopkeepers about that same time, They needed each other to escape the bonds of stifling Calvinism too. They opened their hearts, they opened their minds, and they found there a God of infinite love, a God who forgives all, who loves all, no matter what we have done or failed to do. They compared that love to the doctrine of hell and predestination and punishment and said, no, 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 all are loved. There is no hell. And by themselves, they probably would have just went to church and silently disagreed with the preacher, but they found each other. And together they were brave. And they imagined a whole new religion. And they preached it out loud. And they set the country on fire with the doctrine of universal salvation. It was a great and scandalous heresy. What will make the people behave, said the authorities, if God does not stand in judgment of their actions? And the universalists said, love will. Not fear of punishment, nor hope for favor, but gratitude and love and grace and joy. It was deeply risky, and they did it together, and they changed the whole country. They changed the shape of popular faith, and they saved millions of people from the despair and misery of believing in a vengeful God. Those are our origin stories, the way that these two traditions began, Unitarianism and Universalism. They began in heresy, in stepping out of line, in asking deep questions and not being afraid of the answers. This was the spirit of liberalism and of liberal religion, to embrace the power of reason and progress, to not assume that something was true just because it was tradition, to listen to the heart's own wisdom, to attend to new ideas, to open ourselves to the ideas of other traditions. And so we became a church of risk. We became the kind of place that welcomed both religious and social risk takers, people who wanted to ask deep questions. They came to us because they heard that we were that kind of place. When you claim the identity as a church of risk, as a church that asks questions, as a church that cares about justice and peace and inclusion and love, well, you cultivate and attract people who are ready to take risks for the sake of their vision of a better world. We have been, more often than not, a spiritual home, a supporter, an advocate, a place for meeting and resistance and renewal for those risk takers who called for the abolition of slavery, for the right of women to vote, for an end to Jim Crow and segregation, for the equality of all people, regardless of whom they love, for, as you heard in the story of Rachel Carson, environmental stewardship and responsibility, for peace. Whenever and wherever there has been war, we have cried out for peace, as we still do and still must. For refugees, for the displaced, the poor, the homeless, for children, we have worked, we have advocated, we have sung, we have raised money, we have lent our voices and our strength. This isn't just nationally or internationally, but right here, this church in Rockford. This church welcomed and supported a noted abolitionist minister when others would not. It has been in its lay people and its ministers throughout its history a catalyst for countless justice and service organizations in this town. We stick our necks out when others are shy. We lead the way. We step out of line. When folks in Rockford look for a congregation that will take a risk for the sake of justice, they look to us, as they have for 173 years. Being a church of risk isn't just about social justice, though. It's also about theology and spirituality and religious ideas. Our founders were heretics, and we keep attracting more heretics. And we keep growing them within our own number, within our own body. When we teach our children, as we do, that they should have their own ideas, the strangest thing happens. They do. Less than a generation after those first groups of risk takers proclaimed their belief in the oneness and the mercy of God, the value of human beings and the goal of justice, less than a generation, the transcendentalists came along and they said, hey, let's be even more risky. Let's celebrate each person's spiritual wisdom. Let's open the door to all that is. Let's sing with the body electric and sail wild seas. Two generations after that, the religious humanists, following that thread, said, let's get really risky. Let's let go of the old forms and the old language. Let's have a religion that matters to human lives as they are now. Both the pain, they looked around those days and they saw the teeming cities and the tenement houses, the unsafe factories, the growing divide of wealth, sound familiar? And the possibility, evolutionary and cosmological discoveries, advancing progress, world, community, possibility, and hope. It was risky to step away from the old ways of doing things. And people came because they wanted that faith free of fear, that religion for the time. It was risky. After that, through the 20th century, to become more and more an interfaith and diverse religious movement, a place where Christians and atheists worshiped together, quickly became a place where Christians and atheists and Buddhists and Jews and Sufis and pagans and Taoists and all of the above, and I'm not sure, and I might change my mind, were all worshiping together. Talk about risky. Talk about taking chances. To become that kind of church, by becoming that kind of church, we invented a brand new way to do religion, a way never before seen in the world. Not just the peaceful coexistence of different faith communities side by side. That's happened lots of places. But the presence of people with divergent ideas, metaphors, rituals in one religious home. That risk came out of and reinforced our radical, heretical belief that the holy, the truth, is bigger than any one tradition, any one word. Why would anyone wish its meaning was singular? We are many of the Spirit, one in search, wide the spectrum, great the reach, boldly learning, beginner's mind, endurer's heart. In the last 10 years or so, we've taken as a faith another set of risks. We've become more religious, more spiritual, and more reverent. I'm going to talk about this more in a few weeks when we kick off our month on renewal, so I don't want to give it all away this morning. But suffice it to say that this recent development, claiming an interfaith, reverent, grounded spirituality, is not a departure from our risk-taking, but is well within the stream of who we are and who we have been. A church of risk. Wide the spectrum, great the reach. A traveling faith for traveling pilgrims. A church of wayside hostels. A place for connected sisters and connected siblings. A place of questions. A place where we wonder and hope and imagine and gather and share. A church of heretics and activists, a church of risk. This is who we are as Unitarians, Universalists, and Unitarian Universalists for more than 200 years in this country and for almost 175 in this town. We have been reaching out, reaching deep, taking chances, traveling pathless seas. We've done it when it comes to the work of justice in the world, and we've done it when it comes to our yearning search for truth and meaning. Theologically risky, institutionally risky, socially risky, willing to take that less traveled road, a place where we engender and encourage a church of risk. For me, this heritage is provocative. It provokes always the question, what's next? What's the social justice issue that too few people are paying attention to? What's the minority opinion that needs a champion? This week, I'll tell you that it feels like the voice for peace that must be shouted from the rooftops. To say, what fools are we? To repeat again and again the same horrible mistakes, the same hubris and short-sightedness, the same folly in the desert again and again for 100 years. For you, maybe it's that. Maybe it's something else. What needs to be shouted so that it is heard? What feels risky? Our forebears were afraid too, they were, but they did it anyway. And they helped end slavery and win suffrage and save the spring from silence and secure marriage equality and end Jim Crow. They helped do that because they risked it all for the sake of love. What about theologically? What's the risk we need to be taking? How are we provoked? In this increasingly spiritual but not religious age, when connectivity is growing but institutions are fading, what risks should we be taking so that we can make a difference in the world? Bring the good news of love and reason and open-minded, open-hearted faith to a world that wants it but doesn't know where to find it. What risks should we take now? What questions should we ask that we don't know the answer to? What does science and faith and the encounter with diversity have to teach us for the coming century? What is the longing of our heart in this age? I don't know the answers to those questions. And that, of course, is the point. If we knew the answers, it wouldn't be risky. I'll make some suggestions in part two of the sermon next week, but today, this week, I want you to be provoked, as I am provoked, by the heritage of those saints who went before, who defied the kings and clerics, who stepped out of line and got wild. Be provoked by their devotion to truth and to each other. Be provoked by their courage and their confidence. Be provoked and wonder what it might mean for you to be part of a church of risk, to be a people of risk, to start out on your journey from this wayside hostel to follow these saints. What might it mean for you? Let that question settle in your heart and mind and open yourself to possibility. And let's come back here and see what we think and how we feel and what calls us forward into the future together. For now, let us be inspired. Let us be provoked. And let us sing. Sing in honor of those pilgrims and great companions who gave us this legacy and this heritage, this path in the wilderness. It's 103 in your gray hymnal, For All the Saints.